Unfortunately, the book was still proving too difficult to decipher, but then it had only been a few days since he'd gotten his hands on it. He'd figure it out in due time, but until then he needed to continue to build his own power base. Losing a Hoyce had been a blow, for sure, but Sam had learned a long time ago to never let unexpected events stand in his way.
"Ah, Sam, good to see you,"
Roger smiled to him as Sam came up and stood by his seat. Once everyone was in the room, Joseph Kenyon closed the door, and they all took their seats.
"So, let us begin," Roger said. "We have two openings, and I'm sure you'll all agree that the sooner we start screening candidates, the sooner it will be done. Now, as normal, we'll start the nominations from the junior end of the table and work our way up."
Sam sighed and leaned back in his chair. They were definitely going to be here for a long while. Sean yawned. They were all sitting in a couple of vans a few blocks away from the Gradatim compound. Apparently the council had decided to meet after the funeral for their dead member. There had been some debate over what to do, but Chad had told them that if anything was going to happen, he was certain that it was going to happen tonight. So Sawyer had put someone to watch Sam's house, and they'd all driven here a few blocks away to be close. Thankfully, Roxy's father had made a few phone calls, and any neighbors who called about the suspicious black vans was told that it was a police exercise and to just ignore it.
"Damn, what the hell are they doing in there?" Sean complained. "It's been, what, 3 hours now?"
"Closer to four,"
Bill Channing said, looking out the window. The sun had set, and it was getting dark now.
"Thanks for the collar, by the way."
"Eh, not much else to do with my time. Might as well make a few more," Sean sighed.
"How the hell are you doing that, anyway? I always heard that those things take months to make."
"Actually, according to my dad's notes, he can make them in about 3 weeks."
"And you did one in just a minute,"
Bill said, shaking his head. His son-in-law was definitely nothing like he ever would have expected.
"Yeah, just a little something I figured out."
"Is that how you made those silver tags of yours?"
"Not exactly. They take a lot more energy, and it almost killed me. I'd try it again. I think I could make it a lot safer if I did, and not kill myself. But Rox and the rest threatened to kill me if I tried it and survived," Sean snorted. "So I told them I wouldn't."
"Wise choice there, son."
Sean shrugged.
"Hard to argue with the ones you love. Harder still when they're threatening you with blunt instruments."
"Ain't that the truth?" Bill laughed. "So, have you figured out how to make more?"
"Of the silver tags?" Bill nodded. "I have a pretty good idea of what I need to do. Once we get this current mess all sorted out, I'm going to find a nice quiet place and see about getting it done. That is, if I don't have to worry about constantly being attacked and fighting for my life," Sean grumbled.
"Sounds to me like you need some help, son. Might be time to stop trying to go it all alone."
Sean sighed and nodded his head slowly. "I just didn't want to get others involved in my problems. Hell, up until I got my hands on this," Sean tapped the small tag hanging from his necklace, "I didn't even think such a thing was possible."
"Well, now you know that it is, and that you need to make more. Lots more."
"After tonight, they're really going to be gunning for me, aren't they?"
Bill shook his head.
"The fine folks who make up the Council of Gradatim are going to be very quiet about the events of tonight, lest their number one enemy, the Council of Vestibulum, come down here and wipe them out."
"Vestibulum?" Sean said, surprised. "I thought the Ascendants would be more likely to do that."
"Yeah, they might, but the Vestis and the Gradas have been at each other's throats for as long as I can remember. Some say it goes back to the founding of Gradatim. Might be. Don't honestly know."
The burner phone in Sean's pocket rang then. Pulling it out and opening it up, he put it to his ear. "Yes?"
"A group of people just went inside Sam Wilson's house."
One of Sawyer's goblin spies was on the other end of the line. "Humans or lichens?"
"We're guessing humans." "Uh-oh. Something's going on inside."
What?
I hear screaming. Oh. It stopped. Rather suddenly, too. That's not good.
Sean swore. They killing people inside there?
Probably,
the goblin said.
Oh, here they come outside again. They got that cute fox gal toy of his, and looks like both of his daughters. They got their hands behind their backs, and don't look like they're exactly willing. And now they're getting into a couple of cars and driving off.
Thanks. I guess you're done now.
Done?
The goblin laughed.
I'm gonna go rob the place. Not like anyone's gonna miss it if they're all dead.
Sean sighed and just closed the phone without saying anything. Not his circus, not his monkeys.
I heard, Bill said, and turned to the others in the van. They were all Lycans. The dwarves had all gone with Roxy, Dalen, and Oak, because they didn't want the Lycans there to think it was just another house trying to poach them.
Get ready. They just hit the Wilston house. Once they get back here, the balloon will be going up pretty quick.
Yes, sir, they all said, and started checking their gear. They were all wearing helmets, masks, bulletproof vests, and were carrying shotguns loaded with beanbags, as well as wearing tasers on their hips. No one was supposed to shift tonight, because if anyone saw what was going on, the excuse of a training exercise would still hold up. Sean called up his monitor spell and his offensive and defensive frameworks. He'd lead off with sleep spells and some shield spells for the others, but other than that, tasers and beanbags were going to rule the night. Sean's phone rang again. Yes?
A car just pulled up in front, and a bunch of guys got out. They're dragging two girls and got a third one trailing along rather meekly. She's carrying a small box.
Okay, anything else?
Yeah. They just killed Wilston's Lycan driver and bodyguard. Just pointed at them, and they collapsed. Poor bastards. It didn't look pretty either.
It wasn't. Sean sighed and hung up. Guess it's time to go, Sean said, turning to face forward in the passenger's seat.
Looks like, Bill said, starting the engine.
The vans behind them started up their engines as well, and then followed them as they slowly pulled out and rolled down the street, the ones with Roxy and Dalen's team peeling off to head to their target.
Sam?
Roger asked. Sam sighed.
Finally. They'd gone through a lot of people. Each of the prior members had at least 10 names to suggest, and Sam had dutifully written down all of them, crossing off the ones he knew that he didn't want, underlining the ones he most definitely did want, and putting question marks next to a few that he had never even considered.
I'm not going to bring up anyone new,
Sam said, sitting up straight and taking a sip of the water that one of the servants had refilled not that long ago. Thankfully, they'd brought a few snacks in earlier, or he'd be starving by now.
I'm just going to list the ones mentioned previously by others, which I agree with, so we can just move on to the next phase.
Yeah, it has been a long meeting, hasn't it?
Richard Strother laughed.
Tell me about it, Sam sighed. My latest toy had me up early this morning, too. Besides, lots of good names here, and unlike the rest of you, I hadn't even considered who to nominate.
Sam sighed and shook his head, feigning sadness.
Hoyce's death really caught me unawares. So, here's who I agree with, Sam said, and went down the list, naming all 8 of the ones he wanted to see on the council,
the ones who'd been helping him in his own plans for months now.
Thanks, Sam, Roger smiled. Anyone else?
No, that's all.
Wonderful. Why don't we all take a break?
Roger said, getting to his feet.
I have food and some entertainment set up downstairs in the banquet room.
Entertainment? Harold asked.
Oh, yes. Charles is going to show us some of his newest toys. Aren't you, Charles?
Sam shook his head and smiled.
Charles's toys tended to be short-lived and rather viciously dealt with. But such was the fate of most animals. He just hoped that Charles didn't do anything that put him off his food.
Roxy looked at Oak, who nodded. They'd come up on the back of the kennels, which was really just a rather large 2-story barracks-type building. There were red poles placed around it, showing where the kill line was for any Lycans
who were outside. The front door had a guard station with a human guard sitting in it. Oak had told them that guard duty was considered a punishment, because you had to open and close the door for any lichens that were coming or going, as they couldn't touch it themselves. Needless to say, the guards didn't treat their charges very well, so most lichens were rather slow to use the door, only going through it when they had to. Tonight's young man was busy texting away on his phone, with a set of earbuds in his ears. Oak snuck up behind him easily. Then, grabbing him by the neck, he rammed the kid's head into the wall a few times, stunning him. Roxy then gagged him, put a bag over his head, and they bound him hand and foot.
"This is it," Oak sighed, and opening the door, he went in, followed by Roxy and a dozen dwarves. A man stopped and looked at them, then did a double take. "Oak? Is that you, Oak? They told us you were dead. That you were all dead. What happened?"
"What happened, Granite, is that they executed us because we found something that breaks their hold over us," Oak growled. "They don't know that I got away, and now I'm here to free all of you."
"Free us? Are you crazy?"
"He's not crazy," Samus said, "and we're here to help. Now quit running your yap and put this on."
"What's this?"
Granite said, looking at what Samus was handing him.
"A lichen necklace."
"What? Those are just myths."
Roxy and Oak both shifted, and Granite's eyes got wide.
"Do as you're told," Oak growled. "We're on the clock here." "Come on," Oak said, heading for the stairs. "Let's start with the women."
"Start what?"
Granite said, putting the collar on.
"This," Roxy said, and pulled out one of the tags. "This is probably going to hurt for a moment."
Grabbing his hand, she put the tag in it, and then attached it to his collar. Granite's eyes went wide, and Oak cupped a hand over his mouth while his whole body stiffened. Roxy used his hand to grab the tag again, and pull it off.
"Have him take the necklace off once he's okay," she told one of the dwarves.
What happened?"
Granite moaned, as they let him lean back against one of the walls, which he slowly slid down.
"We got rid of your silver pellet," Oak said.
"That's not possible."
"Today, anything is possible,"
Oak grunted and headed up the stairs. Roxy followed Oak as he went through the upstairs door into the dorms there.
"Hey, no males!"
The woman's voice trailed off.
"Oak?"
"The one and only. Where is Minnie?"
"Minnie!"
the female called out.
"Oak's here!"
"Don't you dare say that," a woman's voice called out from down the hall, out of one of the rooms.
"Get your butt out here!"
Oak yelled. Roxy almost laughed as a woman came flying out of one of the rooms, bouncing off the wall opposite the door as she scrambled to turn the tight corner on the tile floor.
"Oak!"
she called, and launched herself right at him. Roxy noticed that heads were popping out of the rooms up and down the hall, as women and children started to wonder what was going on.
"Everyone front and center," Daylan yelled. "We ain't got time for no lollygagging tonight. We got lots to do and little time to do it."
Oak had to physically strain to pull Minnie off of him.
"What happened? How are you here? Why are you here?"
"I'll explain later. First, put this on."
Oak handed her one of the necklaces.
"Wow, what is it?"
"I'll explain in a minute. Everyone," Oak raised his voice, "I need a dozen of you to put on these necklaces. We're going to do something, and once it's done, I'm going to need you to take the necklace off and give it to someone else."
"What's this all about?"
Minnie asked.
"You know that rumor about the lion who can stop silver?"
Minnie's eyes got wide.
"He's real."
"Yes. Now, this is going to hurt. Put this tag up to your necklace. It will get rid of the silver pellet. But it's going to hurt. It's going to hurt a lot. Then I need you to take the tag off so we can use it on someone else."
Minnie grabbed the tag out of his hand and stuck it to her necklace immediately. She didn't care if it hurt, if it got rid of that damned silver pellet. Oak grabbed her as her jaws clamped shut and her body went rigid for a moment.
How do we know it works?
One of the women asked.
He's here, isn't he?
Roxy said.
You've seen it?
Hell, I've been shot with silver and I'm here.
You're one of the two that attacked the Ascendants, aren't you?
Yep.
Give me a tag, the woman growled, and Roxy handed it to her.
Everyone line up, Dalen said, taking charge. We need to do this fast. Once we have you taken care of, we'll do the men downstairs.
They piled out of the van around the corner and just out of sight of the front of the main house.
Shift, son, Bill told him, and take your mask off.
Huh? Sean said, looking at him.
It's your fight. They need to see you leading it. Besides, Bill grinned at him, lions are the lawgivers and the final arbiters in the shifter mythos and culture. They see you, they're gonna stop and shit themselves.
And they'll all shoot at me first, Sean grumbled.
Well, yeah, Bill laughed. But you're protected from silver. We aren't.
Sean shook his head, but he shifted into his hybrid form anyway. Roxy's dad was right. Probably why he was the sheriff.
Everybody ready?
Bill asked. Everyone nodded.
Okay. Just like we rehearsed it this morning. Cover the outside grounds first. Get the Lycans out front subdued and back to the vans. Any human opens their mouth, beanbag to the head, or taser to the face. Then, gag him and hogtie him. We don't want them throwing any spells around. Now go!
Everyone sprinted for their targets. There were a half dozen men milling around at the bottom of the front steps, just talking softly to each other, glancing up every so often at the two others standing at the top of the stairs by the front door. The ones at the top were leaning back against the wall and really not paying much attention to anything. Sean fired off the rather potent sleep spell he'd learned from Jolene's uncle when he'd tried to cast it on him, at both of them just to see what would happen. He was rather pleased as they both just suddenly collapsed to the ground. At that moment, all six men in the front turned and saw him. They all then looked over at the two sleeping men at the top of the stairs and back at Sean as he and the rest of his men encircled the six.
It's that lion!
One of them said, raising his hands.
The one they couldn't kill,
another said with a nod, raising his.
What do we do?
Surrender, you idiot,
the first one said.
Okay, Bill said. Hands behind your backs. Don't try anything. You know the drill.
What are you going to do with us?
Sean, Bill asked.
Sean looked at all of them and smiled.
I'm going to get that silver out of you and free you.
What about our families?
Oh, we're going to free everybody tonight. So don't act up. We're going to need you to show us to each of your homes. After we finish up here, of course.
Sean turned and followed Roxy's father then. After he detailed six men to deal with the Lycan drivers, they went up to the front door and listened quietly.
Teams, check in, Bill said on the radio.
One, clear.
Two, clear.
Three, clear.
Four, clear.
Okay, everyone on your window or door, as assigned. Let me know where everyone is, or if you see anything out of the ordinary.
Sean took out the lens Bill had given him, and using it against the peephole, he looked through the door. Nothing.
Sounds and looks empty. Good.
They're all in the large ballroom,
came over the radio in a whisper.
What are they doing?
Something bad.
Slight change in plans,
Bill said, and detailed another two to watch the front door.
Sounds like,
Sean agreed, and followed Bill around to the back of the house. Sam followed Roger and the others into the room and just stopped. Hanging by their wrists, naked and gagged, their toes barely touching the floor, were his two daughters. He could see they were crying. And when he came into the room, they both started to struggle. His toy, Sheila, was standing, with her back to the wall, and two men were standing guard in the room and were looking at him with interest.
What is the meaning of this?
Sam yelled, stopping and looking at Roger, who turned to face him, smiling.
Sheila, the book, please?
Sam watched in now shocked surprise as his little fox-lichen playmate walked over to Roger, trembling in fear. She had a box in her hands, the box with Bernard's book. Taking the box, Roger smiled at Sheila and bid her to go stand over by Sam's daughters.
I seem to recall you saying that you didn't find this when we sent you after the young Mr. Valen, Samuel. Would you like to perhaps reconsider that statement?
Sam looked around the room. All of the other council members were looking at him now, expressions of disbelief on their faces, except for Charles, who was now smirking. Sam sighed. His daughters were gone, no matter what he did. Charles would torture them and do terrible things to them. Everyone on the council had a pretty good idea of where Charles's tastes ran, and the kinds of things he did to those who fell into his grasp. When he was finished with them, assuming they survived, he'd most likely kill them. There was no way Sam could save them. The only person he might be able to save was himself. He could always have more daughters, after all.
What do you want me to say, Roger?
Sam sighed, doing his best to look distraught.
That you're smarter than me, brighter, a better planner and a better leader of the council?
Sam motioned towards his daughters.
I'd say you've made that point rather clearly. Now let them go. This is between you and me.
That's a start, Samuel. However, if you want your daughters back, you're going to have to do a few things first.
What?
Sam asked, wondering just what kind of game Roger wanted to play. Every moment he played along was another moment to find a way to escape, another chance to live.
Whip them.
Sam stopped and blinked.
Was that all? Surely it wouldn't be that easy. You'd have me whip my own daughters?
Sam protested loudly. He knew that they'd expect it. After all, everyone knew how much he doted on them.
I want something that you'll remember. Something that will stick with you.
Roger smiled.
I think forcing you to whip your favored children will have a much more lasting impact. Don't you? Every time they see you, they'll remember the day you whipped them, humiliated them before everyone because of your own greed and failure.
Sam looked at his daughters, then looked back at Roger, then looked at his daughters again.
If you don't do it, I'll let Charles do it until they're both dead, Roger warned.
Sighing and dropping his head, Sam took the whip from Charles and walked around behind his two daughters. He'd played this game, for now, because Roger had the upper hand. He didn't miss the wand Roger had up his sleeve, nor the one Charles was wearing in a leg pouch now as well.
Sheila, Roger said, remove their gags so that we can hear their screams.
Sheila nodded and quickly undid the both of them. The begging of the two girls quickly filled the room.
What are you waiting for, Samuel? Get started already!
Shaking the whip out, Sam lashed Camellia across the butt first. Her scream of shock and pain made most of the council members wince. Sam was sure that this was no doubt as much a lesson for them as punishment for him. Peggy was already pleading with him when he laid his second blow over her ass. His daughters were both rather lovely young women, just like their mother. Moving his target, he spread his strikes out over their back, drawing blood on the 8th lash on Peggy. Camellia's back was cut open on the 11th. By the 20th lash, each of the girls' backs were starting to get bloody, and their voices were starting to grow hoarse from all of their screams. Richard, Sam noticed, was the only one not watching. He was talking to Roger about something and gesturing towards Camellia. Sam stopped whipping the girls for a moment to hear what was being said.
I've never asked for much, Roger, Richard was saying, but I'm asking for this. Give the girl to me. I've lusted after her for years, and if you're casting them down anyway, let me have her. Charles can make do with the other one.
But he must be punished, Roger smirked, And what better punishment for a man than making him destroy his own daughters?
Richard snorted.
I would think his seeing his daughter gracing my bed as a companion for my lusts would be more than enough, assuming he cares any more at all.
Roger pondered a moment.
You know, you may be right about his lack of caring.
Samuel, why have you stopped?
I'm afraid if I keep going, I'll kill them,
Sam said quickly. He was fairly certain he wouldn't, but they didn't know that.
Oh, hardly, Roger said with a smile. They're young and strong, and you haven't even started in on this side yet. So why don't you step around to the front and continue?
Sam did his best to make it look like he was struggling with the idea. The more time he bought himself, after all.
I can still have Charles do it, Roger warned.
Bowing his head, Sam walked around in front of his daughters.
Sorry, girls,
he sighed, and giving the whip a flick, he wound up and took Peggy across the stomach, causing her to gasp loudly, the tears in her eyes clearly evident. Camellia he took across her chest, and he was surprised at how loud she screamed. He thought she'd lost her voice by now.
Nice. But you know what? This is taking too long, Roger said. Try this whip instead.
Sam looked at the floor as the new whip Roger had tossed over landed at his feet. Looking at it, Sam suddenly understood Roger's game. The whip had metal barbs coming out of the last foot of its lash. Roger wanted to see Sam whip his daughters to death. Looking over at Roger and Charles, Sam did not miss the smirk on Roger's face, nor the look of almost sexual bliss on Charles's. Apparently the idea of a father whipping his lovely young daughters to death turned Charles on as much as doing it himself, perhaps even more so. Sam almost smiled. He knew the game now. Charles was distracted, and the others were getting disgusted. Once the whip started tearing the girls' flesh off, several of them would leave, he was sure. And the moment enough of them were gathered by the door, with it open, he'd fake a turn on Roger and instead make a break for the door. Of course, he'd have to make this look good, and prolong the game long enough to make sure there was enough blood and gore to upset the other counselors. He truly felt sorry for Camellia and Peggy, and one day he'd find a way to pay Roger and Charles back. But for that to happen, he would have to live so that day could come. Picking up the whip, he lashed out at Peggy, surprised at just how much of her was ripped open by the metal barbs as she screamed hideously. Obviously, this wasn't going to take as long as he thought. He could already see Joseph and Harold were moving towards the door, while Richard was trying his best to bribe Roger, offering to kill Sam himself. Sam was surprised at that. He'd never realized that Richard had a thing for his oldest daughter. Too bad. He could have used that. He decided to concentrate on Peggy first, then. Maybe Camellia would be given to Richard instead of Charles, after Sam made his escape. The idea of thwarting Charles, or at least leading to open discord on the council, almost made Sam smile as he whipped Peggy again, opening her body up even more and causing blood to start to pool around her feet. He wound up for a third lash, when suddenly the windows all exploded. Roxy looked around as they made their way through the children, their mothers holding each of them close. They were using four tags now. Oak and Minnie had added theirs to the two that Sean had given her to use. She felt bad about not using her tag as well, but she still remembered how it felt to get shot with that silver bullet, and Sean had made her promise not to take it off. Roxy had been surprised at the women. Not a single one of them had made a sound, but the children, all of which were boys, oddly enough, weren't being so quiet. The younger ones especially. The dwarves were moving among the women and their children, helping them to put the necklaces on, then the tag, and then helping to get it all back off again. It was taking a lot longer with the children than they had expected, mostly because several of them were fighting it, even with their mothers holding them. That made getting the tag onto their collar difficult, and getting it back off even harder.
What is going on here?
Roxy swore and looked up as two werewolves, both of which were easily as big as Oak in his hybrid form, burst into the room.
Ah, Hunter. Demon, Oak said,
turning from where he was helping a woman with her child.
We're almost ready for your teams.
Oak? Hunter growled. How can you be here? Where is your team? You're dead!
The Council betrayed us. They killed all of my team, so we couldn't tell you what we found. I was lucky to escape with my life.
If you escaped, why did you come back here?
Demon asked, growling as well.
To free us all, of course. Sean, the lion who we've all heard about, commanded me to rescue everyone. Not just many.
Commanded you? Hunter scoffed. So you admit to turning traitor?
Traitor?
Oak yelled back at them, stepping forward.
I've watched as they treated us like no more than dogs. I've watched as they culled us, bullied us, abused us, made examples of us, to instill the fear and obedience that they require. I've done the horrible things that they have bid us to do, never questioning, always wagging my tail and playing the happy pet as I licked their hands and bowed my head. And for that, I got a mission so secret that they killed us all to keep the rest of you from learning the truth.
Oak's hand came around in a flash, and he backhanded Hunter, who flew back into the wall, shocked.
We are done licking their hand. We are done being their lapdogs. We are done with being their slaves. We are leaving. All of us are leaving. Now you will shut your mouth, and you will do as I say. The rumors are real. Silver has been defeated, and we are going to leave this place and live as free men at last.
Hunter launched himself at Oak then, so Roxy moved to block Demon as he growled and stepped forward to join Hunter's attack.
Out of the way, cat.
Roxy just kicked him in the balls, and the fight was on. Demon came back at her with a right cross, but Roxy had four older brothers, and if there was one thing she knew how to do, it was to fight, and fight dirty. She came inside his punch, biting his nose as she rammed a knife-edge strike into his throat with her right hand, while at the same time her left slammed in low, and grabbing a handful of nuts, she squeezed hard. She then followed up with a fast series of elbow strikes, as Demon alternated between trying to breathe and trying to yowl in pain, as Roxy yanked on his nuts, dragging him around by that convenient handle, before tripping him up and then jumping on his chest and riding him down to the floor, slamming his head into the ground again and again.
Yield, you stupid shit, she yelled in his ear. Or when my mate gets here, he's gonna pull your arms and legs off like a fucking bug.
Meanwhile, Oak was having his own troubles with Hunter. Hunter wasn't afraid to fight dirty, and neither was Oak, of course. Being an alpha to a pack was all about doing whatever needed to be done, and fighting dirty was just another tool in the toolbox. It didn't take long for them to start ripping and biting at each other, as they used their teeth and claws, ripping and tearing. Oak had just knocked Hunter back, dazing him with a rather vicious headbutt, followed up by a kick to the stomach, when Dalen's hammer came sailing by and hit Hunter square in the forehead, knocking him back into the wall. Hunter's eyes went wide, and he howled from the blow. Silver. He'd been hit with a silver weapon.
Keep your ass on the ground,
Dalen yelled, as her hammer flew back to her hand.
Or Max here is going to teach you all about the joys of a painful death.
Silver. You brought silver in here,
Hunter gasped, glaring at Oak. Oak growled.
I told you. Silver no longer has any hold over those who come with us.
Looking around, Oak held out his hand to Minnie, who handed back his tag.
This, you idiot, is the key.
And, putting it on, he turned to Dalen.
Give me your hammer.
What? You'll ruin him.
That's the point,
Oak said, glaring at her. Dalen sighed and looked at her hammer.
Sorry, Max. But the man's right.
Looking over at Oak, she tossed him the hammer. Catching it, Max growled as it heated up in his hand, but it was plain to see that something was happening.
What
What is that? Hunter said, as suddenly the air around Oak got unbearably hot, and the plasterboard wall on his left started to blacken and smolder as the shield went into overdrive, shunting off the excess energy from turning so much silver in the hammer's face into rhodium. Oak whacked Hunter in the leg, smiling as it quickly healed.
Well, it's not silver anymore, is it?
Hunter stared at the hammer, and then at Oak a moment.
Demon! Yield! Hunter growled.
Roxy was still pounding his second's head into the now broken floor.
What?
Demon moaned loudly. Hunter sighed and looked at Roxy.
Could you please stop doing that?
Roxy responded by jumping off of Demon, moving quickly out of range of his grasp.
What's going on?
Demon growled, shaking his head and trying to get to his feet.
Get the rest of the pack up here and tell them to behave. We are leaving with Oak.
I think it might be better to finish up downstairs, Dalen said,
motioning to the wall, which was now smoking, along with the section of ceiling above Oak's head.
I think we're about to have a bit of a problem here.
Sean watched through the window as spectacle unfolded, listening in via the microphone one of the men had put up against the glass. He quickly identified who Roger McConnell, Charles Ryan, and Sam Wilson were. The other four men watching, he assumed, were the remaining four senior council members. There were also two guards in the room, which Sean assumed were humans, because they were armed with what looked like magical weapons, rather than any sort of firearm. They were keeping their weapons trained on Sam, and listening to the byplay, it quickly became clear that Sam was being forced to whip his daughters, who were both hanging from the ceiling, naked and bloody, their toes barely touching the floor. There was also a rather attractive but young-looking fox lichen that was cowering against the wall, not far from where the two young women were being whipped. Apparently, this had been going on for several minutes now, most likely having started while Sean and Bill and their men were dealing with the outside guards and surrounding the house. As Sean listened, Bill detailed each of the men on their team as to who was targeting whom.
I've got Roger,
Sean said, as soon as he noticed that Roger was holding the box that contained his book. Bill was finishing sorting out the last details when Sean saw Sam pick up a different whip and lash his daughter with it. They could all hear the pitiful scream as the whip tore several pieces of flesh off her body, and she started to bleed freely as he whipped her a second time. Sean was shocked that Sam didn't drop the whip or refuse. What kind of a man would willingly do such a thing to his own daughters?
On three, Sean called out, then quickly, one, two, three,
and shooting the window with the beanbag shotgun, he took two steps and threw himself through the window, smashing the rest of it with his body. Working the action on his gun, Sean quickly fired two shots at Roger, knocking him down. At that point, he felt a powerful spell hit his shield and drain off as his defenses automatically tarballed it. Pointing back the way it had come, he signed for one with his left hand, sending the same spell back at whoever had shot it at him. Then, he pointed his hand at Charles, who was pointing a wand at him, but before he could fire the spell, someone knocked him down from behind.
Down, you idiot!
Someone yelled in his ear, as a large fireball passed over his head, hitting the wall behind him with a loud explosion, the heat washing over Sean's back. Growling, Sean forced himself up and cast the spell at the back of Charles, who was now fleeing, surprised that it sucked down half of his remaining magical energy and causing Charles to contort into a painful-looking ball as he fell to the floor. Sean quickly followed that spell up with a large ball of ice, which used a lot less power, knocking down several more and stunning them. He started to regret having made Roxy's father the necklace out in the van earlier, as well as casting a spell he didn't know. His magical reserves were suddenly a lot less than he was comfortable with. Looking quickly around, he saw that the two guards were down, one in a ball like Charles was by the door. One of the council members was cutting down one of the girls, and it was not her father Sam, he noticed. And there, scrambling across the floor on his hands and knees, with Sean's box in one hand, was Roger, making for some tables, behind which was another door. Sean shot Roger in the back, knocking him flat a moment, as Sean slowly walked across the floor towards him, then shot him again as he tried to get back up, then a third time, until getting close enough, Sean kicked him in the chest, breaking several of Roger's ribs and lifting him off the floor, causing him to fly into the wall with a loud thud. Sean bent over to pick up the box, keeping the gun pointed at Roger as he slid down the wall. Picking it up, Sean shook it to be sure that the book was still in it, then tucked it inside his vest and walked over to Roger, who was lying on the floor, staring at him, gasping. Squatting down, Sean put the shotgun to Roger's throat.
"These may only be beanbags," Sean growled. "But if I pull the trigger, at this range, you're dead."
"What?"
Roger gasped. Roger gasped again, obviously having trouble breathing. Sean guessed he'd broken a lot of ribs.
"What, filthy beast?"
Sean smiled.
"Pretty bold words for a man whose continued existence depends on a kid whose father you had murdered."
"I..."
Roger gasped.
"Will not..."
Gasp.
"Be cowed!"
Sean reversed the shotgun and brought the butt down hard on Roger's right hand, pulverizing all of the bones in it. Roger screamed, though not half as loud as either of the women had been.
"Gee, guess you can still feel pain."
Sean smiled as Roger looked at him in shock, choking on something. Apparently the force behind his scream had caused him some problems.
"Animal!"
Roger said between coughs.
"Sean!"
Bill called out, coming up behind him.
"What are you doing?" "Asking questions," Sean growled. "Don't interrupt."
Sean looked down at Roger again and put the muzzle back to his throat.
"Who killed my father?"
Roger's eyes got wide as he realized that this was the Valens boy. If anyone would pull that trigger, he most certainly would.
"Chicago,"
Roger coughed.
Yeah.
Sean nodded.
"A hitman from Chicago. Give me a name."
"Weissman, the..."
Roger coughed again, tasting blood.
"Hyena."
"Sean, he needs medical attention,"
Bill said, grabbing Sean's arm. Sean shifted his weight and braced his feet. He wasn't going anywhere yet.
"And who hired him?"
"Not us,"
Roger coughed.
"Then who?"
"Not sure,"
Roger coughed again.
"Another council."
"Sean, he's dying,"
Bill growled. Sean turned and looked at Bill, scowling.
"You saw the shit he was just doing, and you're worried about him dying?"
Bill recoiled at the look in Sean's eyes. It wasn't hate. It wasn't anger. It wasn't even fear. It was judgment. He heard the sound of the gun firing one last time as Sean pulled the trigger.
"Some people don't get another chance, Bill,"
Sean said softly.
"I'm sorry if it bothers you. I'm sorry if you can't agree. But they don't. Now let's see what we've got here,"
Sean said, and quickly went through Roger's pockets and relieved him of several magical items. He did not find the small knife Sawyer was looking for. Then, standing up, Sean followed Bill over to the people lined up against the wall, starting at the end where Sam's two bloody daughters were. The first one was lying on the floor, unconscious and barely alive. The female fox lichen was applying direct pressure to the inside of her leg. Apparently the whip had cut into a major artery. Considering the rather large pool of blood on the floor, Sean didn't expect she had much time left.
"What's your name?" Sean asked.
"Sheila,"
she said nervously.
"Why are you trying to save her?"
he asked the fox lichen, curious.
"She was always good to me, even when the others weren't,"
Sheila responded with an English accent.
"Can you heal her?"
"She's too far gone, and I'm afraid I don't have enough magic to spare,"
Sean told her, regretting his mismanagement of his own powers tonight.
"I don't want her to die."
"Then bite her," Sean said,
remembering all too well how Samson had saved him. Sheila's eyes got wide.
I can't do that,
she said.
Why not?
It's forbidden to bite humans,
Sean snorted.
Not today. Now do it.
Sheila stared at him, glanced at the others who were more concerned with the men pointing guns at them, then back at Sean.
She's dying. Bite her. That's an order. There, now you can blame me.
Sean turned to the second girl. She was clinging to the man who had cut her down and was crying into his chest. He'd taken off his coat and wrapped it around her.
You are? Sean asked the man.
Richard Surrother.
Why was Roger making her father whip them?
He lied about that book.
Richard nodded to the box in Sean's vest.
Said he hadn't found it. Did Jameson die in the fight? Or did Sam murder him?
Sam killed him,
Sean said, and standing back up, he saw the fox girl had her teeth in the other girl's arm.
So, who else do we have here? Sean said, looking around. And just where is the wonderful Mr. Wilston?
He slipped out the door when you all crashed in,
one of the council members that Sean didn't know said. Sean nodded.
So, who's in charge of this organization now that McConnell is dead?
The man on the floor curled up in a ball from the joint-locking spell.
Sean nodded and looked at Bill.
How are the others doing? Do we have everybody yet?
They're almost done, though they accidentally set the building on fire. We have about 5 minutes to get out of here before the neighbors start to notice.
Sean nodded and walked over to Charles, whose body was contorted into a ball, his face a mask of pain. He was surprised that Charles was still conscious. Oak had regaled Sean and Bill with several stories of Charles's favorite hobbies and pastimes. Most of it was rumor, some of it conjecture. But the stories all revolved around the fact that anyone Charles got his hands on were never seen again. As Charles was Roger's right-hand man, there was a lot of looking the other way, even if it was one of the council's lesser members that disappeared.
So, Sean said, looking back at the three council members in the room, is this the man you really want to be in charge?
Kill him,
Richard said from where he was kneeling with the girl.
He's as bad as Roger was.
Sean smiled and pulled out his knife, but then tossed it over to where Richard was.
Do it yourself.
Standing back up, Sean walked over to the unconscious girl lying on the floor and picked her up. He wondered what she'd think when she woke up and found out what had been done to her.
Come, Sheila. We're leaving. Bill, tell everyone it's time to pull out.
Sean looked at the three council members then. Richard had let go of the girl and picked up the knife and was looking at Charles rather angrily.
We go where there are lichens, Sean told them. Leave us alone, and we'll leave you alone. But,
Sean looked them over,
if we have to come back here to free them again, you'll like it even less than this time. Let your people know if we hear stories of torture, death, or slavery, we'll be paying them a little visit. We're not slaves. We're people. It's time to start letting us go.
Leaving the room, Sean turned to look at Sheila.
Do you know where Roger's room was?
Yes,
she said, looking at him quizzically.
Good. I need something from it. Take me there.
Do we have time for this?
Bill complained.
Oh, come on, Bill. You wouldn't want your buddy to be unhappy with you, would you?
Sean grinned.
He's not my buddy,
Bill sighed.
And I think I liked him more when you called me Dad.
This way,
Sheila said, and led them down a hallway, and then into a rather large but fashionably decorated and understated bedroom.
Check the nightstands for a small green knife, Sean told her.
Oh. You're looking for the Durnax tooth,
she said, and going over to the nightstand, she picked something up and came back over to them.
You know what that is? Bill said.
Oh, yes, Sheila said with a shy smile. It was part of my training, back in my old master's kennels in England.
And?
Bill prompted.
It comes from the mouth of the Dernak, Sheila told them as they left the room and headed out of the house. It's a rather nasty beast, because if you get bit by one while fighting it, it causes a man to go into a rut. So their teeth are harvested and used as a form of aphrodisiac for older men.
Magical Viagra, Sean snickered.
Just so, Sheila agreed, nodding. But they are rare and quite expensive.
Gee, I wonder what Sawyer wants one for.
I'm more inclined to wonder why he already had one, Bill said with an evil grin.
Climbing into the van, still holding the unconscious young woman, Sean could see that the kennel building was now smoking heavily.
Time for us to go, Bill said, climbing in behind him and closing the door.
One of the other men was already in the driver's seat, and starting it up, they drove off. Sam watched from the bushes as the last of the vans drove away. Apparently they'd only come for the book and the lichens. From the lack of attention that was paid to him and anyone else who was running away, he quickly deduced that they weren't here to kill anyone. It wasn't that long of a walk from here to his home. 20 minutes, tops. Less if he hurried. He'd get there, grab a few things, and go. He didn't doubt that Roger or Charles would be after him, once the dust settled, and probably the other Grada team members as well. No. It was time to leave Reno and head east.
Aftermath.
Where to, boss?
The lichen driving the van called back as Sean handed the unconscious girl off to Sheila, who had shifted into her human form.
He's asking you, Bill said to Sean after a minute,
causing Sean to feel just a little bit uncomfortable with the realization that he really was in charge now.
Where are the drivers we grabbed?
Sean asked.
They're in the second van, Bill told him.
Well, we promised to take care of their families, Sean sighed. Tell them to lead us to each of their homes, and we'll go get them. I guess we'll start with the family of the ones they killed. Sheila here can tell us where that is.
Bill nodded. Sounds like a plan.
He got on his radio and started to talk to the team in the other van, getting addresses and planning a route. Oh, get Roxy to meet us with a couple of necklaces and those extra tags while you're at it, Sean told Bill as he leaned back.
You have a radio too, son, Bill pointed out.
Yeah, but you're better at this than I am, Sean said, closing his eyes. So I'm going to delegate. Sean definitely needed a few minutes to catch his breath and think about what to do next. Shifting back to human form before getting into the van had almost wiped him out magically. Recasting that spell that he had archived through his shield really hadn't been the brightest of ideas, just as Jolene had told him a couple of days ago, the spells coming out of items were fairly powerful. Yes, the effect of the spell was impressive, however, its cost was as well. He needed to learn that there were limits to his power, and he needed to learn how to operate within those limits. He'd come into everything so quickly that he really hadn't taken the time to get to understand it, to become comfortable with it, to know its limits. He was going to have to work on that. When they pulled to a stop in front of Wilston's house, they were met by the goblin who had been watching it. Sean pointedly ignored the rather large bag that he was carrying slung over his back.
Don't bother going inside, the goblin told them.
Why?
Bill asked. Sean noticed he was looking rather pointedly at the bag of obviously stolen loot.
Because they're all dead. Everyone. The servants, his son, even his wife.
What? Sean said, surprised.
Hey, don't look at me. I didn't do it.
I didn't think you did. Sean shook his head and got back into the van, feeling even better about his decision to kill McConnell and leaving the other guy to certain death. Let's move on before someone notices us.
This isn't going to be easy to explain tomorrow, Bill sighed as they pulled away.
What isn't? Sean asked him.
A string of vans showing up at houses all over town with teams of armored men running inside them, then back out with a bunch of people. Those shotguns might only be shooting beanbags, but they're still almost as loud as the real thing.
Huh, Sean said, and thought about it for a minute.
Hey, Van 2. Put the guy on whose house we're heading to next, Sean called on his radio, having hopefully come up with a workable solution.
This is Hans. What do you want?
Sean heard after a brief moment. If we just stop in front of your house and let you run inside, do you think you could get the other Lycans in the house to just come out and hop into the van with you? You know, make some sort of excuse so the others inside won't even know you're going anywhere until you're long gone?
Easily,
Hans said. Good. Everyone hear that? That's what we're going to do at each of the stops, understood? Sean noticed that Bill was nodding as a lot of yes sirs came over the radio.
That'll help, Bill agreed.
I hope so, Sean sighed. When Roxy catches up with us, me and her will use the collars and the tags on everyone as we free them. So when they are finally missed, we won't have to worry about any casualties.
What about the homes of the other Gradatim Coven members?
One of the guys in the back asked. We can't free them all tonight, Sean told him. Other than the council members, we don't know who else in Gradatim keeps Lycan slaves, or even where the other members live. This isn't going to be over in a few nights.
No. No, I guess it isn't,
he agreed.
But you have to admit, one of the others said, that it sure is one hell of a start.
It was after midnight when they got back to the staging point. All Sean wanted to do was sleep. But as soon as he got out of the van, Dalen and Jolene had come running up to him and Roxy, wanting to be sure they were both okay.
Come on,
Dalen said, dragging Sean along by the hand.
I think you'll want to see this.
See what?
Sean yawned.
This,
Dalen said, and pulled him into the large room where they'd set up that morning before the sun had come up. Sean didn't know who owned the building. Bill had just told them that a wealthy werebore had loaned it to them. In the room, there were dozens of people sitting or lying on sleeping bags that had been arrayed neatly on the floor into about 8 different groups. The people they'd just freed from the different counselors' houses were being handed sleeping bags as they came into the room, and were now looking around for places to sit.
Who are all these people?
Sean asked, looking around.
Those are Gradatim Lycans, Oak said,
coming up to Sean, with an attractive young woman attached to his arm. Sean made a silent, oh, with his lips, as he looked around the room. There were about twice as many men as there were women, and probably an equal amount of young boys.
Why aren't there any young girls? Sean asked. Just boys?
Because they don't raise girls to be soldiers in Gradatim, the woman on Oak's arm growled. Sean winced at the tone of her voice, and decided that he didn't want to know more than that.
You must be Minnie.
Hi, I'm Sean.
Minnie smiled at him.
Thank you for saving us, and thank you for saving Oak here as well.
You're welcome, Sean said, and then looked at all of the people there a second time. It looked like close to 100.
Pretty impressive, isn't it?
Dalen chuckled. Sean nodded slowly.
Yeah, it is. What's going to happen to them, though? They don't have any money. Possessions. Hell, I don't even know if they even have any legal IDs.
About that, Oak said, and Sean couldn't help but notice Oak was smiling. We all talked it over, and we decided that we wanted to work for you. All of us. The Alpha teams, the Beta teams.
Even us women,
Minnie added.
What?
Sean said, looking at the two of them. Then at Jolene, who just shrugged, and Dalen, who was smiling rather happily.
They're yours, hun,
Dalen chuckled.
They all want to work for you now.
But, Sean looked at Roxy, who shrugged.
Where else are they going to go?
Dalen told him.
Like you said, they've got nothing. They've got no body. Hell, they were all raised to be servants. Most of them don't have the slightest idea what to even do with themselves now.
Sean facepalmed.
I just obligated myself to them, didn't I? More like they feel obligated to you.
What's the difference? Sean sighed.
I all but own them now, don't I?
Yes, but, Oak's voice was serious.
Unlike our previous situation, you not only care about us, you're actually one of us.